On today's episode of Hoops 360, we highlight the best moments from the 2026 WNBA draft. Maggie Venoni of CT Insider talks the Connecticut Sun sale and what she saw at the draft. Plus, we dive deeper into everything we are seeing in a very hectic WNBA free agency. Stay right here. Welcome to Hoops 360. On this week's show, we have back Maggie Venoni of CT Insider and the winner of the USBWA Rising Star Award. A very belated congratulations on that, Maggie. Welcome into the show. We're going to talk about the most notable moments from the 2026 WNBA draft. We were both in Manhattan at the Shed for that, the annual event. How free agency has been shaking out, because that also happened this weekend. That kicked off on Saturday. Very condensed offseason. Training camp is on Sunday, guys. And we're going to get your insight into the Connecticut Sun, everything going on with that franchise. And Kathy Engelbert talked a little bit about the agreement that is in place to move them to Houston. Maggie, official welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on again. It's a pleasure to join you guys.
Yeah, of course. We got to see each other at the draft, kind of in passing, because AZ Fudd was a top prospect. First time in a while, we actually didn't really know who was going to go number one, but it was AZ. She was taken by the Dallas Wings. She's the seventh UConn player to go number one overall. Kendall Baker in our newsletter had a fun little trivia question about who were the others. He gave the years, which I thought was kind of a giveaway, but as you're listening to this podcast, you can think of who all of the other number ones were. Maggie, you cover UConn very, very closely. Did you have an indication that AZ was going to be number one? What kind of were your thoughts throughout the season in terms of her WNBA potential?
Yeah, I think coming into this year, back in November when this college season started, all signs pointed to she would be the top pick. You know, she came off a Final Four MVP. She was having such a great year, proving that she came back better from her ACL injury in 2023. So I think that's what I assumed at the beginning of the year. And then, you know, UConn season, they blew out everybody. They weren't having much challenge on the court. And so I kind of thought she would keep that spot. And then her NCAA tournament wasn't the best that she could have had. You know, she had a really great game against Syracuse in the second round and then kind of dipped off a little bit in the regional. And then, as we know, UConn kind of just fell apart in the Final Four against South Carolina. And I think after that, ESPN projected her to drop as low as four. So I wasn't quite sure. I knew she'd be a top four pick. She wasn't going to go that far. And to see her bounce back up, I think obviously what Dallas did during free agency really set them up to have a pick a guard. And AZ was the top guard in that draft. Knowing that she can play well off page, she can spread out the floor, give them actually a three-point shot. So I had inclination, I think, after free agency, that's when I was like, okay, she's going to go back up to the top. This is what Dallas needs.
Yeah, I want to get into the page of it, but I think the fit aspect is really important here. We'll kind of go down the next three players in the draft, but it did feel like this wasn't a Paige Becker's year. It wasn't a Caitlin Clark year. It was a what fits onto your team year. You mentioned free agency. I think you and I both kind of said yesterday when we chit-chatted that as soon as Dallas signed Alana Smith, they didn't really need like a Lauren Betts, you know, to kind of develop. They had that defensive presence, a rim protector. They were going to look at guard. Kurt Miller, the general manager, basically said that the night of the draft, that once that was in place, it completely made sense to take AZ. And that's kind of why the rest of the draft figured out the way it was. But you mentioned that relationship with Paige and AZ. I thought it was interesting that at Team USA camp, when Paige was asked about this, she said, you know, we're proven winners. We won the national championship game together, she said. So I think there's great success in that in terms of their relationship at UConn and the success that they had when they actually were on the court. How do you see things going in Dallas?
Yeah, I think, you know, covering UConn this is my fifth year covering UConn, we really only saw a healthy Paige and a healthy AZ play together for probably, if you bring all the games together, probably about a season and a half. Like, really, it's not a lot of body of work to see what those two, who are great individual stars, can do together when they're both at their best. So I'm very excited to see what they both can do at this pro level now that they are both healthy and they are both have taken bigger strides in their game, right? Like AZ came back from her ACL injury playing the best basketball of her career. And so I'm very excited to see what that will look like now that Paige has reached already, you know, a year under her belt of playing in the pros. She obviously won Rookie of the Year last year. She knows what it takes. And so to have her game elevated and matching AZ's game that's also now elevated, I think will be very interesting to see.
It does feel like a attempt number two, I guess. Because I remember it as Paige being very influential in bringing AZ. Mm-hmm. They were back-to-back number one recruits. There was so much talk about all the championships they could win. And as you said, we just never really got to see it. Like from either of them, Paige missed time as well with an injury. It feels like now that they're in Dallas, like maybe we're going to see what this dynamic duo can really, really do in that system. Also, since we're talking about Dallas, this happened late last night, but they signed Alicia Clark, which I think is a huge veteran presence for them. Obviously, her talent on the floor, but she talked a lot when she was in Las Vegas about just being a leader in that way, showing how to go about things. I feel like that'll be huge for Paige, even though she has a year under her belt in AZ as well. Is there anything else about AZ's special night that you want to highlight for us, especially since you know her and the team so well?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you with Dallas. I think they have just reloaded their whole entire roster. I think they are heading into the season as potential, you know, they're going to get into the playoffs and they're going to want to compete for being in that final spot. I think, you know, what AZ's body of work in college, like you said, it feels like a lot of what could have been, right? Like she came in with so mm-hmm. much hype, her and Paige, like you said, back-to-back number one high school players. AZ was Gatorade Player of the Year, National Player of the Year as a sophomore before she had her first ACL injury. So there was just, this player has been through so much just adversity, and each time she has proven to come back better. And so I think her going number one overall last night was just a, for her, I would imagine, just a combination of all the hard work was worth it, right? She is now doing what she's always dreamt of being in the WNBA. She's doing it alongside one of her best friends. And she's really proven that those injuries really didn't set her back. They only kind of made her stronger. And so I'm very excited to see what she does at this next level. You know, what her, how her game translates. Obviously, she's a great defender. We all know she's a terrific three-point shot. But just what does that look like altogether now playing against, you know, older women, bigger women, and a more competitive, more physical game?
My memory is mud, but I think you wrote a feature about how the Fudd family has a lake house in Connecticut. Are they getting a house in Dallas? Maybe not a lake house, but...
yeah, so for those that don't know, AZ's grandparents actually bought a house here in Connecticut, in Coventry, once she committed pretty much to Connecticut. And they've spent the past 5 years here, living here half the time, like 6 months out of the year. It's a really cute little cottage. It's really cute. And in true Connecticut fashion, and it, you know, it's old and it has a lot of history. They will not be getting a house in Dallas, from what her grandparents told me. It's just... they understand the W is a business, right? And that you can settle as much as you can, but at the end of the day, you don't really have control of how long you'll be in a market or just what that looks like. And I think also her grandparents are from Minnesota and they selfishly really love Minnesota summers, as I'm sure anyone would. And they don't want to give up their Minnesota summers for Dallas summers.
Yeah, just wait until Dallas comes to Minnesota. Exactly. That's all you need.
Exactly.
Perfect. Let's go over the top four quickly, because it felt like any of these could go number one at any point. We have Olivia Miles out of TCU, also kind of out of Notre Dame. This is the interesting part mm-hmm. about transfers now. She goes to Minnesota. I really like this pick. I had said a while ago that it'd be nice if Minnesota had a point guard. Maybe they look like that. Courtney Williams had taken more of the ball handling duties for them. But when Cheryl Reeves spoke about it the night of the draft, she mentioned that this is their first true point guard since Lindsey Whalen, who is a four-time champion with them, Hall of Famer, and an assistant on the Lynx staff, which Olivia talked about. At number three, we have Awa Pham Thiam from Spain. She goes to Seattle. The Storm love an international player, dating mm-hmm. all the way back to Lauren Jackson from Australia. So Pham will join last year's number two pick, Dominic Malanga of France, and Ezzy Magbegor, who came over to the W at the age of 19. She's 26 now, which seems crazy that she's been in the W that long. Mm-hmm. And then at number four, Lauren Betts, the UCLA champion, 6'7" center. She will go to Washington, where they are just stockpiling young talent. The top four Did any of this surprise you, shock you, stand out to you in any way?
No, I think those, like you said, those were the top four that really separated themselves in this draft. A lot of people, you know, were familiar with Alba's game, but maybe not quite as relevant or knew as much as these other four or other three college stars. I was very impressed with Lauren in the NCAA tournament. I felt like she won national champion and she was MVP of the Final Four, but she just played her best basketball when it mattered. And seeing her dominate, UCLA had been to the Final Four the year prior, but they had never played in the championship game. And I was so impressed by her. So seeing her go forward to Washington, like you said, I think that team is going to be just loaded with young talent. And she will obviously be an automatic impact. And so I'm very excited for her. And Olivia going number two, I think, like we said, AZ was the best shooting guard. Olivia was the best point guard in this class. And giving Minnesota that, I think, will be really helpful. She will only get to learn under Lindsay, like you said, but also under Courtney, and learning just what it takes to be a point guard in the league. Yes, you have to have talent and skill and be a great passer and have a great IQ, but learning how to gel with, you know, grown women and figuring out where do they like stuff, how do they want to play, and how do you read your team when you are a rookie coming in and these women have all been playing for, you know, 5-6 years, however it may be. So I'm very excited for her development as well.
Yeah, I like that. I always like when you're entering a situation where there's someone who can help you, right, and wants to help you in that situation. And I think that's Courtney. Speaking of a player who had an incredible national championship game and saw her stock rise, Gabriela Jaquez goes to Chicago at number 5. They have 3 straight picks from UCLA. They set a record with 5 first round selections. All 6 of them went in the draft as expected. That is a record. It beats Tennessee, Notre Dame, and South Carolina. You also have some other highlights. Tanaya Latson, I think, is one of those players, to your point about Courtney. She dropped precipitously. She was in the room, taken 20th. I think, I don't have the order in front of me, but she does go to Los Angeles. And I love when a guard gets to learn from Kelsey Plum. I think Kelsey Plum has really made she's made a side business of helping these players through the dog class. I just like that connection. And I think it's another example of, you know, history may say that she went number 20, but maybe she has a really long career and wins a championship. In terms of highlights and lowlights, we can't not talk about the draft without talking about Flauje Johnson. Golden State selected Flauje at number 8 overall. She looked pretty shocked in the room, just very surprised. She had a very special conversation with Holly Rowe. And then Seattle selected at 14 and 16. At 14, they selected Tiana Mayer from Duke. And at 16, they selected Marcia Suarez from TCU. Pretty immediately after that, news dropped that Seattle was going to trade Marcia Suarez to Golden State along with a second-round pick. Golden State was sending Flauje to Seattle. Again, very shocking in the room. I believe you were upstairs. When people got wind of this, what was the reaction?
Yeah, I think that was obviously the first trade that happened last night. There was one other. We talked about this yesterday. It's been a while since we've seen draft day trades happening in the draft, during the draft. So I think it was just shocking of like, oh, like, wait, what? You know, why? There were a lot of questions about why didn't Seattle pick her? You know, why didn't Golden State want her? What was the trade? And then after the fact, you know, Golden State's GM was talking about it and obviously didn't answer the question, didn't make it very crystal clear of why the trade happened. And I was just reading, you know, ESPN reported after the fact that Seattle and Golden State had agreed to this, but hadn't fully set the terms before the pick had been called for Golden State in the first round. And so I think it was more of like, it came together last minute and it just kind of happened that way. Obviously they had been able to agree to this fully before the draft, before the picks had been made, they would have, but it seemed like the deadline to do that was Sunday before the day before the draft. And so it seemed like kind of a last minute, okay, well, this is what you're going to pick. This is what you're going to pick. And then we'll agree on it. And then we'll make the trade after these picks have happened. But I think Seattle, I think that's a really great fit for Flauje. I think she'll get a lot of space to do what she wants, to be herself, and have a lot of room to make an impact. Seattle was in a rebuilding year, as we've seen, you know, had a lot of free agents and a lot of the free agents left. So I think they have a brand new coach. I think she'll have a lot of space to carve out an impact and carve out a lasting impact in that franchise that we know loves stars, that we know builds people and really develops their young players.
Yeah, you mentioned Ohemma Nianan to the general manager for the Valkyries. Kind of, I think, made this into a bigger story than maybe it had to be. She said, and I quote, "I'm going to take a beat to be able to eloquently give a response," when she was asked about the trade. "I don't have a lot of detail to share. One, because I'm exhausted. Two, because I want to be very thoughtful when I'm talking about other humans and their basketball abilities and how they would or would not show up for our squad." She was later asked kind of if it had salary cap implications. And we'll mention here that these rookies are making, AZ Fudd is making $500,000 in the coming year. I saw a lot of people saying like how much more that was than every other UConn number one in the history. It's a lot. Paige was at like 70 last year, just to give everyone an inkling. But she was asked if it had salary cap implications. She said, and I quote, "I don't talk or comment about salary cap, so I wouldn't be able to answer the question," in a way. I want to talk about all of this because I think you're probably right. Like, maybe fit wise, this is a great move. I think what drives me crazy, so I did confirm that the deadline to trade picks was 5 p.m. on Sunday. I was told it's historically done so that the order is locked in ahead of the TV broadcasts. And I think this is kind of where my problem lies, because we see in other sports, and I double-checked with the NFL, which their draft is coming up, that you can make these trades within the draft. And so I think for me, like for Flage and Flage's family, you know, you're kind of like settling in with, oh, okay, like you're going to Golden State. What does that mean? The excitement or maybe whatever feelings about it. You have fans. I know for a fact someone reached out to me and said he was so stoked he was going to buy a Flage Johnson jersey for his daughter. Of course, he made the joke like he's glad he didn't do that. And I don't think they were immediately available. Right. But you have a fan base that's so excited. And then to have this trade that was made ahead of time that you knew about, I feel like you just set these players up in a poor way. And I think what drives me crazy is it's another example of how the league and everyone around it, because it's not just the league front office, it's, you know, GMs, it's coaches, it's players, agents, the broadcast. I think we rely too much on like how this has always been done or what is easiest for us. And I think this is just a moment to look at and be like, are we okay with this happening? Because on the one side, trades are normal, right? As you said, like this has happened before where you trade players. It is what it is. But does it have to happen this way where, like you said, they're like calling each other like, hey, so Flage's available. We would like her. Please take her now. Mm-hmm. That is bizarre to me. And I just think it's an opportunity to take a look at everything going on, rip it down. You know, we have a new CBA and figure out a new way to do things. Also, I am sorry, Ohemma, but saying that I'm exhausted, so you're not going to answer the question after 2 months of like, do you think the reporter asking the question wasn't also exhausted? Like, I'm exhausted. I bet you're exhausted. Yeah. We are all so tired right now. And training camp starts in like 5 days.
Yep.
So I just felt that was completely off base, an absolute misstep. I felt like it was in poor taste. Like,
no.
Also, it's your job to talk about salary cap.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
When I saw that, I literally thought, girl, we're all exhausted. Like, this has been the most crazy, 3 weeks, 2 weeks ever? Literally, Final Four ended. The national championship was a week and a half ago, right? We all came back.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the draft was on Monday. Like, the turnaround and then adding all this free agency because of the CBA stuff. Like, there has not been a minute to breathe. So, we are all exhausted. That's a true statement. I agree with you. I think the way she answered that question, she should have taken a little longer of a beat. Because I think also in that answer, it almost, the way she phrased it with, it's not up for me to talk about how a player would fit with us or show up. I think that was her direct word, was show up for us. Mm-hmm. And that, me, is like, you could have just said, okay, maybe I can't speak on it, whether we had already agreed to this in Seattle, it just came up last minute. But saying about a player can't show up for this, it's a little bit more individual. And I felt like it did feel a bit more like of an attack on Flage. I know she probably didn't mean it that way, but that's how it came out. And I totally agree with you that her response really lent this to be a big deal when, like you said, it really kind of wasn't, especially if they had already agreed to this and it was just a timing thing. But I agree. I think there's a lot of issues with the W in terms of organization, in terms of just procedures and how things could be a little bit more professional, especially now that we have this new CBA. Like you said, it's a great chance to burn it all down and start again.
Yeah. Yeah. I will point out, I think you're absolutely right. Because in one phrase, she says, I want to be very thoughtful when I'm talking about other humans. And then she follows it right up with, you know, how they would or would not show up. Mm-hmm. Maybe she didn't mean it that way, but you got to think about it. Your favorite or most interesting moment from the draft, especially since we were both on site and maybe saw some things others didn't?
Yeah. I'm a big softie. I loved it. I love it when players get drafted out of the audience. You know, I think someone go in and kind of have an inkling of like, okay, I think I'm up for it. I think people are interested, but maybe not. Like we saw with Kate Martin a few years ago, she was literally sitting in the audience. This happened last night with Charlize Leder Walker from UCLA and Sarah Williams from UConn. They were there cheering on their teammates. We knew that Charlize was going to get drafted. I mean, she is a great player. She just wasn't, as we said, you know, formally invited to the W draft from the league. And this doesn't mean that they didn't think she was draft eligible. It just meant the W only really draft or invite, sorry, I think like top 12, top 10. I don't think it's a whole top 15.
I think it's 15 now, okay. Just because they have 15 first round picks, but it used to be 12.
Right. I forgot. We have two more teams this year. Again, we're all retired. So yeah. But, you know, it just means that she was there just kind of by herself. She was there cheering on her UCLA teammates. And then it was really cute. One of her teammates actually gave up some seats at her table so that Charlize and her mom and her family could be at that table and have a moment instead of literally being in the audience. Like Sarah Williams was in the audience and she was surrounded by her UConn teammates when her name was called. And I think that's really special that, you know, they're there. They're there celebrating. They have hopes, but probably not high hopes. And it's really cute. It happened last year with two UConn players as well. So those are always my favorite moments.
Yeah, I like those moments. Angela Dugalich mm-hmm. was the player who gave up some of her seats. And Kasan Prosper, she was drafted out of Notre Dame. She entered early, actually. She gave up a year of eligibility. But to your point, she talked about that. Like, she was asked, why? Like, how are you here? Why are you here? And she said, like, this is a dream realized. I wanted to have my moment with Kathy Engelbert. I wanted to feel all of this. So I was going to make sure I was in New York. And I feel like that's such an important part. Like mm-hmm. it's so easy to get caught up in the next thing and, you know, what it means and, oh, well, does it matter? Like I was drafted anyways, but like you should, like you said, like you should savor the moment and like have something special. And it's so nice, especially for UCLA and UConn last year, where you have like all of your teammates there to celebrate you as well. I particularly liked Flage's moment with her brothers. I think being in the arena when Holly Rowe was like, oh, like your brother can come up. And he just looked, I don't know if cameras caught it, but he looked so excited. He was like, oh. That kid has theater kid energy. Yes. He like shuffled over in his little suit to be there. He gave some hugs to Gianna Neefkin's family. Mm-hmm. That's like why you want an in-person draft is these random things. I will also throw in here that we caught Alex Rodriguez speaking with Kim Mulkey. So that's always interesting to see who's whispering to each other. Let's jump into, I guess, how we started our night in New York. Kathy Engelbert always speaks with reporters. For you, you cover the Connecticut Sun. So we do want to ask you, she was asked a little bit about the Sun sale, the agreement that they have. That franchise, as was reported a couple weeks ago, will be moving to Houston. Here's what Kathy Engelbert had to say.
What would you say to the fans in Connecticut and the New England area that obviously are losing their team after this year?
Coming off a significant expansion process for the WNBA, we had 13 cities bidding on, remember, what we thought was one team that we would grant. Maybe it was 18 months ago now. And obviously, we've now announced Cleveland, Detroit, and Philadelphia in 28, 29, and 30. We did not receive a bid from the Boston market or the New England market, obviously with a Connecticut team there. The Mohegan Tribe then hired a banker to represent them in the potential sale, or I think it started with a variety of options, a partial sale, minority sale, and ultimately they did reach agreement that you've read. We have not got anything final at the WNBA yet. When we get that agreement, we will put that through our governance process. It'll be subject to our Board of Governors vote. So obviously the Connecticut has the opportunity under the sunset season. So I would say to the fans, support the Connecticut Sun this season. And, you know, it's a great basketball state, obviously, for women's basketball. Some would call it the center of women's basketball with how successful UConn's been over so many years. So I would say, you know, stick with us, stick with the WNBA. We know that fandom won't go away.
As someone who covers Connecticut, what did you kind of take away from Kathy's presser?
Yeah, you know, she was asked, you know, how do you feel like Sun fans should feel now that this franchise, which has been in this Connecticut state since 2003, that's moving, relocating not just out of the market, but to Texas and to Houston. And she very, very much kind of in her answer disvalued the efforts that Boston and Hartford and the New England market as a whole put together to really save the Sun and keep it in New England. You know, Boston was the first team or first market that really had a public offer on the table to buy the Sun. Hartford came like a couple of weeks after that of, hey, we're gonna buy a minority stake in the ownership. We're gonna build them a practice facility. We're gonna keep them in state. And I feel like her answer really just discredited all of that. And then her saying, oh, stay with us, fans, you know, stay with us and come with us to Houston. Like, I don't know if you know this, but Connecticut is the basketball capital of the world for what they say. With just men and women for UConn basketball, you know, there's a lot of stars that have come from the state, whether through the state itself or through UConn. And so I think that it really hurts to see, for these people who live here, to see a pro franchise, a pro women sports franchise leave. You know, when the Sun do leave next year, there will not be a pro major league pro team in the state. And that's upsetting, I think, for young girls, young boys and girls to look up to and not see an outlet for where they could dream. And I don't think you're going to see a lot of Sun fans traveling to Houston to become Comets fans, if that's what they're going to be named. You know, that's an expensive ticket. That's way out of the way. That's not a casual fan's going to come do that if they are in Connecticut. So I think it's her answer really just kind of made this whole situation that has taken a year now. Last May is when the Sun announced that they were evaluating the future in Connecticut, the owners, Mohegan Tribe. And I think we knew relocation was probably inevitable at some point, but to see her answer and see it really just disvalue all the work that New England has done to try to keep this team in market is a little upsetting for fans here.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that because I think you nailed it with the discrediting phrase. Like, it was, it did. It felt like a discredit. She was kind of given this open forum asking, like, what do you have to say to the fans? And she said, stick with us, stick with the WNBA. We know the fandom won't go away. I'm curious, you know, like you said, you've been in the state for 5 years. You know it really, really well. You've done a great job covering it. What do you feel like their fandom is going to look like when they do move? Like, are they going to switch team fandoms? Are they going to just be regular fans? Like, it sounds like you don't think that they're going to just become Comets fans and like watch the Comets on TV.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you will have a couple who are just, you know, like we know the Sun was originally in Orlando as the Miracle. And I'm sure there were some Orlando fans watching it in Connecticut. You know, like there will be some, but you're going to miss out on this whole market, right? They're not going to be, I don't see a lot of Sun fans turning into diehard Houston fans. Maybe a few, but I think a lot of the sentiment that I'm getting from my reporting with Sun fans is that they're upset. They feel like they were wronged. They feel like this was stolen from them, and they understand that this league is booming and blossoming, but they felt like there was ways to keep it in this market, whether in Connecticut and Hartford or even in Boston. You know, both of those, I think it's important to point out that both of those offers were for more money than what is actually being sold for. And so I think you might have some that become Liberty fans, as that's the next closest market and team to this little area. Maybe in the future, Boston gets its own team. I'm not sure. But I just don't see a lot of them becoming big-time Houston fans.
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. I know a lot happened in Kathy's presser. I'm curious if there's anything else that stuck out to you that you wanted to have the forum for, I guess. There were a lot. It was the first time we've talked to Kathy as a collective since the CBA and since the finals.
Yeah. You know, going back through her transcript that was posted, I felt like she was asked, you know, was there one moment in the CBA negotiations that kind of stood out to you or that you didn't realize players would be so serious about? And she said housing and how she kind of assumed that if you are in your 20s and you have two kids, that housing wouldn't be an issue. And to me, I kind of took that back of like, what do you mean? You know, like these players are bouncing around different markets. They are bouncing around their own market in terms of whether how long their contract is. They want to be with their kids. They want their kids with them. Of course, housing is an issue, no matter if you have kids or not, but particularly if you have kids. And so I thought that was really stunning because here is a grown woman who has kids of her own that understands housing needs. You know, why wouldn't you think your players would also? So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. I felt like when we discussed this yesterday, like I took a little bit of a different tact and I think I still do, but I do think kind of like we talked about Ohemma, it was almost like she meant well. Like I thought a lot about how Kelsey Plum said when they were, she was excited to finally get in the room and talk about the CBA in person with them because they could each hear each other's sides. And it felt to me like maybe that's what Kathy was getting at, like mm-hmm. she was looking at this from just such a different lens and maybe like a board of governors lens versus like being in the weeds with it. But the way she said it, like, I think came off really poorly to a lot of people. I will say, I think probably the way, I don't know this for a fact, but like probably the way that they are looking at it is the professionalization of the league, which they had talked about. And so if you're a professional league, like, why are you paying for all of your players to have housing or like giving them stipend money to live wherever they want? Because there are a lot of players, especially not always, but especially those ones with kids who are taking the stipend and living where they want, which is kind of like free money. I would love that. I do like, you know, we've gone over like the CBA a million times, but I do like where they landed, where it's kind of being phased out. And it did seem like that was what Kathy was saying, that they had come to an agreement. I think she was trying to be authentic. And like, to your point, many people sitting in the room were like, what?
No, I agree with you. I think that it's kind of, yeah. Like you said, professionalism. You know, we look at these leagues on the men's side who have had, you know, these giant contracts and money for years. You know, the NBA doesn't pay for their players for housing. And I do think it's good that it is being, like you said, it's being phased out as these players in the W are making more and more money where they can't afford that themselves. But yeah, I think, like, my thought goes straight to the players who are on hardship waivers, right? Who don't know how long mm-hmm. they're going to be in a city for, who need that housing. They're not going to go rent for 3-4 months in the summer if they're only going to be there for a couple weeks. So I'm glad that was also part of the CBA negotiations, that those particular players will be taken care of, because that's unfair to make them have to rent something for however long and they don't know how long they'll be there.
Yeah. We'll kind of, I guess, quick hit some other mm-hmm. things that Kathy went over. I think what stuck out to me and I followed up on was the officiating task force that she talked about in November. She didn't really give many additional details, but said that there will be something coming. There's going to be some focuses on that. Was there anything else from Kathy that stood out to you on the heels of the season?
Those were the two, her son comments on the son and the housing were the most, I think, relevant to me and what stood out the most. I was in and out of her presser. I had her do a couple other live hits. But I think it was great to see her talk to media after all the CBA. Like you said, it was the first time that the general media had spoken to her after this, and she will be around, I'm sure, during some of the openers in this next month or so. But to see her during this one of the most pivotal times of the season, the college draft, is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the season openers, and we are on the heels of it. Training camp opens on Sunday. We finally have rosters for a lot of teams. As we said, free agency, the signing period opened on Saturday, but let's go back all the way. We were all, oh, I saw you. I saw you the morning, Monday morning. And we were doing some Final Four shopping.
Oh, yes.
And then Angel Reese was traded.
That's right. And
so a bunch of us had to hurry and write about Angel Reese. That kicked things off. We had a week of negotiations. We had signings beginning Saturday. We had a bunch of players moving around, a bunch of players sticking around. There are a bunch of contracts that are not finalized. A lot of superstars waiting to sign maybe some team-friendly deals. Before we get into all of that, we will stick with the Sun because that is your beat. What have you noticed out of Connecticut in their final sunset season, as they're calling it?
Yes, this is their final season in Connecticut. I thought to me, obviously, their biggest move was signing Brittany Griner, BG. That is huge for them, not only just to have a veteran presence, right? They have a very young core. So having someone that has been in the league, that knows the ins and outs, that knows how to keep a locker room together, I think will be very important for this team. She's also an incredible skilled big that they need. And I think the biggest thing about her signing was that she's from Houston, right? And she knows by going to Connecticut now that next year they will be in Houston, her hometown. And I'm sure she absolutely wants to be on that team during their first season in her home state. So that was really cool. I think that's maybe we'll see more Texas natives wanting to sign with Connecticut, knowing that it's 1 year in Connecticut, but then they're going to be in Houston. So that was very interesting. And I think puts a little bit more positive spin on how this move does benefit some players. They've also signed Kennedy Burke. They've signed Shea Petty to a training camp contract. But they have a very young core. They drafted we're exhausted. great rookies last night or Monday night in the draft. That including two Bruins, Charlie's Ledger Walker and Gianna Neepkins, who know how to play together. He'll be huge. You know, Charlie's does play point guard, and that's also what they need. They have, like I said, a really young core in terms of in their shooting guard room and in their front court. So by having her as point guard will be very helpful. They lost, obviously, a fan favorite and one of their stars in Marina Mabry in the expansion draft. So by having Gianna, by having Charlize, by signing Brittany Griner, they're able to have some more scoring production to make up for Marina.
It kind of feels like, I don't mean to like put ideas in people's heads, but it feels like the BG move is maybe a potential retirement in Houston at some point. She is, I don't know what my dog is getting into. We're all tired. she is out of the 2013 class, and it feels like maybe that's coming. Things have happened so quickly, and I don't expect you to have reporting on this, but do you think there's going to be a lot of maybe like crossover of Connecticut and Houston things this year? Like, are we going to see kind of Houston icons, you know, like the Cheryl Swoops and stuff, show up in Connecticut or not?
I'm not sure. You know, the Sun have already announced their kind of promotional, what they'll do for the sunset season as they've themed it. I know they're going to be honoring a lot of their Sun legends. They've have a couple of numbers already up in the banners, but they're going to be inducting a lot more, they said, just to really recognize this franchise's history. You know, no one quite knows what the Sun franchise history, what will happen to it when it becomes the Houston Comets? Or is Houston going to recognize it? We know Houston already has its own history being in the league before. How do you mesh those together? So I'm not quite sure. You know, they haven't announced anything. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see that towards the end of the season, maybe the last few games, maybe a kind of symbolic, you know, passing of the torch, if you will. I'm not quite sure. But I think if that happens, we wouldn't see it till the end of the year.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I'm excited to see your reporting about that because it is so confusing in general what you do with a team's history. But especially now, like on Basketball Reference, it's still going to say Connecticut Sun, right? I would assume. But then it says Houston Comets. But also there was like a previous Houston Comets. It's kind of like Detroit, actually.
Exactly.
Because the Detroit Shock, yeah, went to Dallas. And now we're getting like another Detroit team. Oh, this is all so messy.
I agree. Yeah, and it's not like the Sun were also Orlando, right? Like, well,
yeah.
And Orlando was competing when Houston was competing.
Yeah.
So you can't, like, it's just, it's a whole mess. I have no idea how they're going to organize it. And like you said, if Detroit, if that team becomes, you know, quote unquote, the shock, what does Dallas do? Like, Dallas is the shock. I have no idea. I don't know how you organize that. I don't know what banners you put up. It's a whole, again, burn it all down, start over.
Speaking of messy, we had a lot of moves in free agency. We're both going to kind of hit on what stuck out to us. What stuck out to me is two franchises that seemed to be decimated by free agency. Number one was Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We talked about Alanna Smith going to Dallas on a max deal. Jessica Shepherd left. They haven't announced signing Nafisa Collier, who we're not sure if she's even going to be ready for the beginning of the season. It seems like she's going to still miss some time. Didn't really bring anyone back and didn't sign anyone notable. It definitely feels like in Minnesota, like, maybe they're just kind of doing a little bit of a throwaway season. Now, that said, like, I'm not going to count against Cheryl Reeve. The last time they had kind of like a throwaway season was around the time they drafted Nafisa Collier at number 6. Now she's an MVP candidate. So I think they're going to be fine. Olivia Miles is going to be fine. The other one, though, is Seattle. Mm-hmm. Neku Gumake leaves, goes to Los Angeles, which we'll get into more a little later. Gabby Williams leaves and Skylar Diggins leaves and goes to Chicago. Interesting because it's her hometown, but certainly we have a lot of questions about that. What were some of the biggest surprises, whether that's those teams or others for you?
Yeah, definitely those teams. Like I said before, Dallas completely reloading, I think, was also very impressive to me just because their rebuilding year last year sunk, right? It did not go as planned. It failed. They brought in Jose Fernandez, which will be great. I think he'll do a much better job of just getting a buy-in from everybody. And they, like you said, they signed Jessica, they signed Alanna Smith, they just signed Alicia Clark. So they have all these players that I think have a lot of veteran presence, and they know how to win and will help Paige and AZ and their younger players. So I'm excited to see what they do. I mentioned Seattle, pretty much their big three all leaving. We knew that they had a new coach and that meant some departures, but to see all three leave is really telling. I thought seeing a lot of players buy into Toronto, I thought that was really cool as an expansion team. You know, they are starting from ground zero, right? They have no identity yet. They signed a few big names in the expansion draft. We saw, obviously, Kian Nurse just go there yesterday, Canadian native. We saw, Scrafta, I don't know who else was going there. But I think
there's so many moves.
Yeah, like we said, it's been a long week. I think Skylar going to Chicago was probably the biggest head turn for me, just because, yeah, it's her home state. But as we know, that franchise really struggles to keep players. It struggles to develop players. It just struggles to buy-in from fans because of just all the quote-unquote messiness going on in that front office in terms of how they handle contracts, how they handle their business off the court. And Skylar is one of the top veterans in this league who has proven, you know, she knows what she's doing. She knows how to bring people together and how to win. So I was kind of confused by that. Maybe she sees something in it that we don't. Obviously, she's more involved than we are. But those are my top ones. Obviously, Satu also going to New York. That also was one that was interesting to me. New York has a really big core now, you know, with Satu, with Jonquel Jones, with Breonna Stewart. I'm very curious how you play all three of those who are going to want to be in that starting lineup, who are going to want to make an impact. I also thought Satu did great fit great in Phoenix. So to see her leave that franchise was very interesting to me. Obviously, Phoenix re-signed Alyssa Thomas and DeWanna Bonner. I wouldn't be surprised if we're starting to see them sign some other big names as well. So I think those were their two biggest signings of free agency.
Yeah. Let's talk about New York a little bit, because I felt like one of the trends looking at the early days of free agency was that some of the finals contenders that we thought of during the offseason really just built them up better. And that was very much New York. I also don't quite know how that's going to fit. That's going to be a huge lineup, though. I also think it's overlooked a little bit that B'Nai Jelani Hamilton seems to intend to come back to New York. She missed last year with injury. Leonie Fibich will be in that lineup. Sabrina Ionescu will probably take some ball handling duties, more of the main ball handling duties, which Jonathan Kolb was asked about in his exit interview and talked a little bit about that, about how they were trying to figure it out. They do have a first-year head coach. Maureen Johannes, I believe, is also coming back. They're just stacked. Like, they are going for broke. And, like, I'll be interested to see what the numbers are when this all breaks in terms of how they're fitting this under a $7 million cap. But they certainly feel like they're going to be a favorite. Las Vegas, to our understanding, is bringing back their core. I think they did announce formally Chelsea Gray and Jackie Young. Asia Wilson told us that she does not intend to leave. Quite frankly, I think that's all Becky Hammon needs is those three and, like, put some pieces around them and they'll be fine. Indiana brings back the players that they wanted to bring back. Kelsey Mitchell, Sophie Cunningham, Lexi Hull. They make some additions around them. How did you feel about kind of these favorites, sans Minnesota, and we'll throw Atlanta in there too, re-signing because they were kind of a favorite. How'd you feel about how they handled free agency and what it's looking like right now?
Yeah, I kind of wasn't surprised by Vegas by keeping all of their core. Like you said, those are their best new players. So I wasn't really surprised that they didn't make too many big moves in free agency of signing any new names. Like I said, with New York, I'm just like you, I'm very curious how it's going to look, how it's going to fit. We know New York has a very high standard and has a very much like, we're going to do it all or we're not going to do it, right? So I think that'll be interesting to see how they play off of each other, how they share the ball, what just that offense looks like. And you mentioned Atlanta with Angel. Obviously, BG left Atlanta to come to Connecticut. They have Brianna Jones. They signed their core in Ryan Howard and, Alicia Gray. And so I think we'll see an even stronger Atlanta this year than we did last year. Last year, they were, like you said, a fan favorite in the playoffs. Unfortunately, didn't make it very far. But I think this year, having that core back, they have Brianna Jones back, that will help with the chemistry. That will help with just maybe kind of nailing some things out that maybe were a little bit loose last year. And like you said, if Minnesota, you know, I also would not bet against Cheryl Reeve. whether Fee plays half a season, a third of a season, or whatever it may be, you know, Fee's going to come back and she's going to really elevate that team whenever she does. I don't know if we're at the point yet where she's considering not playing at all, but we'll see what her recovery looks like. I did see she is back in the boot, so that's a great sign that she is hopefully getting closer to playing versus being on a scooter. But they also have a young core now too, right? They have Olivia. Mm-hmm. They have they lost Natisha Heidemann to Seattle in free agency, and they lost their bigs in Alana and in Jessica. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how they reshape their identity without those two.
I should have started this conversation with a disclaimer that everything has happened so fast and so condensed that, like, I was watching the draft from the floor with a reporter friend and I'd be like, oh, like, this team should take so-and-so here. And they'd be like, oh, well, what about so-and-so that they just signed? I'm like, oh, I totally forgot about that person. Like, rosters are moving around all the time. So we're sorry if we're a little slow on the names here.
This has literally happened within, like, the past 3 days, but also in the 3 days, it's been a college draft. It's been the end of the college season. So, and it's not over. It's not over. Like, they're still doing signings.
So from where we stand right now, it is Wednesday, let's say noon, because we haven't kind of been on our phones while we're recording this. Wednesday noon, from what we can remember, who do you have as kind of maybe like a fringe finals contender or like a team that could push them?
I think Dallas is going to be a lot better. I think this is not me showing my UConn coverage. You know, I think they've put up some really good pieces. And Jose Fernandez did an excellent job at USF. Obviously, totally different levels of play, totally different rosters. One's college, one's pro. But I really see his vision. And I think Kurt and him will work well together in terms of keeping that roster and building it. So I would not be surprised if they are in the playoffs, semifinals. I don't know if I'll put money on them yet to be in the finals. I think that still New York and Vegas are going to be the favorites. But I would say the top four, those three, throw in Atlanta in there, and we'll see.
I'm going to go with the Sparks. I love that they re-signed Kelsey Plum for $1 under $1 million, which is very Kelsey Plum. But they bring home Nneka Gumike, who has so much history in this franchise, hits the game-winning shot for their Game 5 win against the Lynx in 2016, won the MVP that year. Most importantly, though, like, this is a team, and Kelsey was very blunt about it at the end of the season. Defense was their Achilles heel. Like, they had one of the best offenses in the league, and defense just doomed them every time. I think Nneka is going to help with that. They bring back De'Aaron Cahambi, as we kind of started off with. I think Taniya Latson, this is a good place for her to fall and maybe get some minutes here. You know, maybe they add a guard. They did sign Erica Wheeler, but maybe they add another guard into the fold. But I think this is a team that could push some of the best, much like you. I'm not going to bet the house on them making the finals or maybe even the semifinals, but I do want to see how this comes together. It's Lynn Roberts' second season. You have good pieces. Cameron Brink is there, and I believe this will be her first kind of fully healthy season after she came back the beginning of last year. I think that'll be a pretty good team to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. I think you're totally right that Nneka signing them, you know, I think that's going to be huge for them. I think they were kind of missing. Obviously, Kelsey is a veteran in herself, but Nneka is such a leadership presence on and off the court, as you've seen. So I think her returning to them will really help bolster just their mentality and their, hey, let's make sure we are contending. Let's make sure we are in the playoffs and fixing our defense.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I will also note on your Dallas pick, because I like that one too. I'm also very excited to see, like, Paige, you know, probably better than many of us, is always like a joker, kind of poking and prodding, and is already doing that to Alana Smith. I just want to see, like, how that plays out. This entire roster is so fascinating to me. I do think they have good pieces, and they have a good coach who I think will do a good job. And Kurt Miller is a proven commodity too in terms of what he's able to do. I think it just didn't work last year. I will be interested to see in the Arike of it all, because they re-signed Arike Ogunbowale this free agency.
Yeah, I think they have they made some really good moves in free agency. You know, like we said, them really paying attention to their post and really stacking that room up, that was their priority in free agency. And once they did that, they can move on to their spacing, their offense, drafting AZ number one. I think they are really going about the season of it's not a rebuilding year part two, but it's kind of a let's totally relaunch. You know, let's just do what we can to really elevate every single part of our game.
Very much also, you know, in the line of Seattle, Seattle again, and Indiana when they got those. And Las Vegas. We forgot about Las Vegas. When they got those consecutive number one picks. That is a wrap for Hoops 360. A very tired Hoops 360. We're sorry. Maggie, thank you so much for joining us. It was so nice to see you in New York and have you back. I know that you're tired as well, so I appreciate your time. To our listeners, if you agree or disagree with any of our takes, or if you want to add a new perspective, leave us a comment.